Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Jack Hoffman. For nearly 31 years, Tico Steakhouse has been a staple for fine dining in Jackson, Mississippi. I would like to invite you to come experience our family tradition of our hospitality, sizzling steaks, and healthy poured beverages. Call today or stop in and experience Tico's in the second generation.
With locations in Ridgeland on County Line Road and now on the Square in Oxford.
You're listening to the Rebel Report podcast, where it's all Ole Miss all the time. Here's your host, Michael Borky.
Welcome in, everybody, on this Sunday night to the Rebel Report. My name is Michael Borky, but you guys are with me. Had a great day out of the Sanderson Farms Championship, and I hope you guys did as well. Good field, good finish, had another playoff. It was awesome. But you're not here to talk about that. You're here to talk about Ole Miss football. And the theme for the night is the chaos weekend that happened in college football. Says two things, in my opinion, about Ole Miss, or it means two things about Ole Miss. One is a big picture thing, and one is a very macro in the immediate. So those two things I've got for you tonight, and then we'll get to your comments and get you out of here on this Sunday night. Again, my name is Michael Borky. This is the Rebel Report. Subscribe if you have not already. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Rebel Report, subscribe. And if you like what you hear, leave a rating and a review. And also, if you're on YouTube, like the video, leave a comment. We see those as well and appreciate you being here wherever or however you are listening or watching. This edition of the show is presented by the Gregory Law Firm. Injuries sometimes in life happen to you, or if you're a small business owner, you're going to come across something in which you're going to need some legal advice. DJ Gregory of the Gregory Law Firm has got you covered. He's the best in the state, and he can help you, again, personal injury, small business, or even some contract disputes. He's in Saltillo, Mississippi, but he can service you anywhere in this great state. Save this number because you may not need him today. But if the time comes in which you do get injured, or you are a small business owner and you need some legal advice, you don't want to be left out in the cold and not knowing where to go, here's where to go. The Gregory Law Firm, 662-397-9799, 662-397-9799. Don't delay. Call DJ today. The Gregory Law Firm presenting the Rebel Report. So two things I think the chaos weekend says or means for Ole Miss football, and then we'll get to your comments and just have some fun on this Sunday night. First, I'll go small. I'll go macro involving this game and then big picture. So I said it a little bit in the post game, so I'm going to get kind of repetitive, but I think it bears repeating. I think it's very important to point out just how workmanlike and dominant Ole Miss was yesterday. And, you know, the score was, I mean, Ole Miss dominated on the scoreboard as well. It could have been a lot worse, even if you just change the outcome of one play where Juice Wells loses the football on his way into the end zone or out at the one, then it's even worse than it looked. But Ole Miss thoroughly dominated South Carolina, more so than the scoreboard reflects. It was from the jump. At no point did I feel like the game was going to go a different way. They were in complete and total control of that game from the very beginning. And that is a South Carolina team that beat Kentucky by 25. And if not for a phantom flag on a pick six, would have beaten LSU in that very building. That is an extremely difficult place to play football. Williams-Brice is, I think, the most underrated in terms of hostility stadium in the country. It's a very tough place to play. And Ole Miss going in there after a difficult loss and a difficult week. So after all of that went down, to go in there and to workmanlike dominate South Carolina the way they did, when you look around college football and see that Alabama couldn't do the same thing, that Tennessee couldn't do the same thing, Michigan couldn't do it, USC couldn't do it. If not for ACC officials gifting Miami another win, Miami couldn't do it either. It was a chaos weekend in college football, and Ole Miss's game was nothing chaotic. It was workmanlike. It was dominant. That is a credit to Lane Kiffin. That is a credit to Pete Golding and all of the coaches on their staff, and it is a credit to their players, and especially the front six on defense, did not allow themselves to get involved in the chaos, and that was a spot, and that was an environment where they absolutely could have fell victim to the chaos in college football. So in the macro, or is it the micro? Whatever. In the small picture, focused on just this game only, that is a significant deal. That is a big deal. And in the big picture, what the chaos weekend says or means for Ole Miss is that, frankly, this is something that we knew going into the season, but there was always that, you know, there's so many teams in the SEC that are good and they don't really play each other that much. You could run into a situation where you've got four teams that are 11-1 or five teams that are 11-1 or 10-2, and those scenarios happen. And after Ole Miss lost to Kentucky last week, their path to the playoff, it felt unrealistic. And you know, I said, you know, until they win in Baton Rouge, we're not going to talk about playoffs on this show. And I'm still not going to outside of this context. But what happened this weekend showed you that not only does Ole Miss not have to be perfect, but the idea that a 10-win SEC team, I think, is getting left out of the playoffs is ludicrous to me. I don't think it's going to happen. In fact, I would bet on a 9-3 SEC team making the playoff this year. It makes the Kentucky loss look like nothing. I mean, losing to Kentucky at home is better than losing to Vanderbilt on the road, for example. I think the Kentucky loss at home versus Arkansas on the road, those are comparable losses. Now, Arkansas, you know, they have a win at Auburn too, but I'm still not convinced that that is a super great Arkansas team. And I do think that they have some more losses coming, but still. So now you've got losses around the league as well. It's not going to take perfection. They don't have to run the table. And it looks like everybody is human. Tennessee is more than human. Georgia is human. Alabama is human. All Ole Miss has to do, nothing about what happened last week says that they cannot still achieve their goals now that you've seen everybody else play a difficult game. So everything is still very much right in front of this team, and they still very much are good enough to achieve those goals. Just look around. It is absolutely still there right in front of them. Now they're banged up. Baton Rouge is another difficult place to play. LSU presents the most difficult offense that Ole Miss has seen so far this year, but they're a favorite. It's a winnable game. If they're healthy enough to do it, they can still enter the bye week in fantastic shape. Only Texas in the SEC is without a blemish, and frankly, I think one's going to come for them too. To me, it's just a matter of time. So, chaos weekend, Ole Miss was completely without drama. And the drama shows that everything's still very much right in front of that team. And there is nobody on their schedule that looks daunting or unbeatable, or a game that you look at and think, you know, they're not getting that one. As long as they take care of their business, they're going to achieve their goals. It's still very much in front of them. The Kentucky loss looks a lot different now than it did just a week ago. We'll get to your comments after I tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online at absms.com. Advantage Business Systems has you covered for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. Tell them I sent you, you'll get a complimentary office technology assessment. So you tell them what you need and what your budget is, and they will find a solution for you on me. Advantage Business Systems, absms.com. The podcast is also brought to you in part by Priority One Bank. They make you their priority every single day with their online banking platform. It's a one-stop shop. All you need is an internet connection, and you can do whatever it is that you need to do with your money, because Priority One Bank makes you their priority. By the way, right before we started, I saw a video of the Nashville Fire Department recovering the field goal from the river. So they recovered they got the field goal post out of the Cumberland River. And I don't know what they're going to do with it. I assume Vanderbilt's going to cut that thing up and sell it for, you know, fundraising or whatever. But what an, I mean, that game supersedes all of the other ones. I know Vanderbilt's in the SEC and they've got a lot of money and their graduates are usually very successful people and whatnot. But I could not help but be so happy for Clark Lee, you know, an alum of Vanderbilt taking a damn near impossible job. All of the players, obviously, but man, think about every fan base thinks that they're tortured. All of them think that they're tortured. Ole Miss fans, you think that you're tortured. Everybody does. Even Alabama fans somehow think that, you know, they've had it tough or whatever. Think about what a Vanderbilt fan that, you know, buys their season tickets every single year and goes to every single game to watch them lose to East Tennessee State like they did a few years ago, to watch them be a mockery of the SEC. And those people just keep coming back, and they keep coming back for some reason. Something just keeps bringing them back to that stadium, and they got rewarded. All of that patience, all of that torture got rewarded in such a beautiful way. And on top of it all, on their video board, they got to troll Nick Saban because of something that he said a week ago about how the only place that it's not hard to play is Vanderbilt in the SEC. And as they're storming the field and taking the field goal posts out, they get to do that. They got to have that moment that they almost never have. I don't know any of those people. I'm not friends with a tortured Vanderbilt fan, but I know there's one out there, and I know I'm happy for him. So anyway, yeah, as Pat leads us off with just Vandy and a bunch of ha 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 ha's. Diego Pavi is a dude, though. I mean, he's such just tough and fun and physical and just got such a good attitude, just swagger and confidence and everything, man. He's special. If Dart learns how to complete a pass over 30 yards, his team could be dangerous. So he can. I know there's been a debate about, you know, how good his deep ball is and how he's always been bad at it or whatever. The numbers say that he's not as bad as people think that he is, but the last two games he has been bad. But what should be encouraging is that's not, you know, him. That's not as good as he can play. He has been and has shown you that he has been much better than that throwing the football down the field. Is he perfect? Well, no. But he's a lot better than that. And so if he starts, if he figures it out, if he stops pressing, whatever it is that is causing him to be so errant throwing the football vertically, then yeah, they've got something. And if anybody can figure out quarterback play and offense, it's Lane Kiffin. I mean, the fact that the offense has been discombobulated for the first 2 weeks, I think if you want a spin zone is, I mean, how many other coaches in college football would you trust to get an offense right during the course of a season with talent that you know exists than Lane Kiffin? So Dart was bad yesterday. There's no doubt about it. He was bad. He's been a lot better, and he certainly can be better. The ACC headquarters is over the video reviews in the last 2 weeks. We know who they're putting in their college football playoff hopes in. I mean, the targeting, I understand the Hail Mary call from 2 weeks ago. Yesterday, Cal helped the cause as well. They choked the game away, but there is no excuse for that to not be a targeting first down game over. I mean, that was, and I'm an anti-targeting guy. I think a lot of targeting hits are not that, and kicking guys out of games and suspending them for halves of games for a lot of these hits is garbage. I don't think it's a well-written rule. That hit was exactly targeting in every single way. Every single way. And they reviewed it and did nothing about it. And and since officials don't have to meet with the media, they don't have to answer to stuff like this, people gravitate towards conspiracy. And I don't blame them for doing it, because there's no way a professional replay official can look at what happened and say, you know, that's not it. There's no way. That's exactly what it is. You just realized if you storm the field, now you have to pay the university who beat you the fine. Yeah, could you imagine how just awful it will feel for Alabama when they get the check in the mail from Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt is going to send Alabama a check, a $100,000 check. Sorry we stormed the field after we beat you. I mean, wow. How is Perkins playing so good at DN when he is built like a safety? Because the way they're using him, because they're not just lining Perkins up at a tackle and just saying, go get the quarterback. Pete Golding's being very creative with how he's using him. He's lining up on the edge, but he's not playing just a true defensive end. He's playing edge linebacker, and I think those are two different things. They're using him creatively, allowing him to operate in space, allowing him to, when he goes after the quarterback, to be able to read things first, almost like a spy. But they're using him the way a guy with his body type and his closing speed and athleticism needs to be used. And what's funny is there's still improvement. There are still things yesterday that he can get much better at. But the light bulb is coming on for him clearly, and in the way that Pete Golding is using him is certainly putting him in good positions as well. But I think that the light bulb is coming on, but I also think that there's a lot of room for improvement. There's a lot of room for improvement. They've got to get Bentley involved this week. I think the day is coming where Bentley is going to get carries. South Carolina fans were great. Definitely the best fans as an opposing fan you've been a part of, even after the game. Interesting. I'm glad you had a good time. I've talked to people that had quite the opposite experience, but that's going to big college football games. You're a product of who you're sitting by, but I'm glad you had fun. The stadium environment is great. Stadium's, dated like most of them are. And the location of it's not great. The tailgating scene is, it's got like an NFL vibe to it more so than a college vibe for sure. But I'm glad you had fun. It especially helps when you win the game, I assume. Every at-large bid is going to be an SEC Big Ten team, and people will be upset. So the Big 12 has a chance, but I don't think that you're going to have four leagues with, multiple bids at this point. I really don't. Miami is going to get bit here soon. I think that the SEC is going to be a five-bid league possibly this year, definitely four. But I think that five is on the table for the SEC this year. And especially now that Michigan's lost and they're going to be out. They already have two losses. They're about to have three. USC's not making it. Penn State has a shot and their schedule is pretty easy. There's an opportunity there. Ohio State and Oregon are going to give the other a loss this weekend. So, yeah. Has someone tried unplugging Dart and plugging him back in? A Texas team that is starting Arch Manning is a vulnerable one. Well, they are going to get Ewers back, I think, this week. So, you felt so bad for the three guys trying to take down the goalpost while everyone just videoed it? They got it down. They finally figured it out. I do love how they stormed the field single file. I love that about Vanderbilt. They respectfully found their way on the field. Love that. Who has it on their bingo card that Notre Dame versus Army in November would be a winner, gets an at-large bid to the college football playoff? So Army and Navy are undefeated. Let's see what Army's schedule is. So Army beat Tulsa by 42 points yesterday. They've got UAB at home. That's a bad UAB team. They've got ECU at home. They've got Air Force at home. Three straight home games. They should win all of those. At North Texas, Notre Dame, hosting UTSA and Navy. So yes, they will be the Vegas favorite to be undefeated for that Notre Dame game. What about Navy? Let's see. Navy's undefeated. They got a big win over Air Force yesterday, 34-7. They've got Notre Dame as well. I forgot about that. So Notre Dame's got both undefeated service academies on the schedule. So Navy's got Charlotte this weekend. How great would that be to have Notre Dame essentially eliminated from the playoff by Navy in 2 weeks? After Notre Dame, it's Rice, South Florida, Tulane. Ooh, that'll be tough. East Carolina, and then, of course, Army. What a great story that is, though. I absolutely love the service academies. They're just the best that this country has to offer. And the fact that they can deal with what they have to deal with on a daily basis, their schedules are absolutely insane. And play good football on top of that is just so impressive. Curtis says there's zero chance Army gets an at-large bid to the playoffs. I disagree. Beat Notre Dame. I don't think they're going to, but if they go undefeated with a win over Notre Dame, they will climb up the rankings to the point where there's a chance. There would be a chance. Heard a lot of during the week about South Carolina's defensive line, thought the O-line held their own and looked better than last weekend. So a very different defensive line from South Carolina. Far less physical. I think Kentucky's front six or seven overall is better than South Carolina's, but those two ends were for real, and they gave Ole Miss's tackles a lot of problems, but only gave up one sack. There's some holding calls mixed in there as well. But that duo of ends is unique in college football. LSU doesn't have those. I think Oklahoma's defense overall is better than South Carolina's, but I don't think they have those two ends. You could probably argue that Georgia doesn't in terms of just those two guys. But yeah, they pass protected better than I thought they run blocked. And they're still trying to figure things out too on the offensive line is Ole Miss right now. A lot of injuries. A lot of working guys back from injury, trying to figure out what your best five is. Very few challenges like the ones that they just faced with those two ends in America, though. Very few. Clark Lee owes his career to Jerry Kill. That regime was dead in the water before he brought in the New Mexico State crew this year. Absolutely. Jerry Kill's the man. And just wait till they go to Jordan-Hare here soon. If Boise State loses again and Army goes 12-0, they will be the top-ranked G5 team. Kiffin rocking the Judas Wells shirt was hilarious. Yes, it was. They tried so hard to get Juice a touchdown in that place, and Juice fumbled one and then dropped one, but also Dart, gosh, missed him wide open in front of the student section as well. They were trying to get him one. There's no doubt about that. All of a sudden, the Arkansas game seems to concern you more than LSU. Are you wrong? You know, just playing in Death Valley is a problem in its own, but Arkansas seems to have some crazy voodoo. Yeah, and if you know me, I very much shy away from past when talking about football games. Like, I don't think what Ole Miss did in 2018 or whatever has any reflection on this team. I don't think past results that came from teams that were not coached by these coaches or played by these players. But yes, that Arkansas game looks much more difficult now for sure than it did before. I don't think more difficult than LSU. And then also, what's the status of Talen Green? What kind of injury was that? It looked awful, unfortunately, for him. Looked really bad. But yes, that game, especially right before Georgia, that'll be a weird spot. I think LSU's offense is better than that of Arkansas's. Although, you know, if Green's available, his dynamic playmaking is certainly an issue. But I still think LSU's a more difficult game. But Arkansas is no longer, well, Pittman's going to be fired by then and they're screwed, you know, at least not right now. Oregon versus Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, Ole Miss, LSU, not a bad weekend lineup. It's a great weekend lineup this weekend. It is great. Shout out Frosted Flakes. Poopball is quickly becoming your favorite player. Kid plays like his hair is on fire every play. Ole Miss has so much nasty in the front six. He's one of them. He's a psycho, and I mean that complimentary. Dottery plays like that. Yeah, I mean, Nolan is just a beast, man. That front six for Ole Miss is, I mean, I know the debate now is it the best in school history? It's deep and it's physical and it's nasty and they're really good tacklers. And that's going to travel. I mean, being that good on the front six on defense is just so valuable. And you're seeing now what Ole Miss has been missing in the past in their defensive front six and how much more past teams could have benefited from being like that. And Pete Golding and the Grove Collective, you fans funding the Grove Collective to be able to spend what you need to spend to get elite defensive linemen has turned into a unit that is just a joy to watch. They are nasty. And they play pissed off all the time. And it's so much fun to watch great front six play on defense. It really is. Speaking of tearing down goalposts, you notice South Carolina's were mechanical and they lowered them right after the game. Wonder how many universities follow suit in the future. Those have been around a while, a good long while, but so there was an incident in the Tennessee-Arkansas game in which a Tennessee player threw an Arkansas student to the ground and his seemingly girlfriend went with him. That to me is what's going to kill field storming. One, I think that fans get overzealous and like, why are you Arkansas fan walking at best going through the Tennessee team to get to the field? There's other ways to get to the field. That at absolute best, with the purest intention, telling everybody great game, which let's be honest, that wasn't happening. But still, that kind of incident is going to kill what is an awesome thing about college football, and that's field storming. But idiots can't stop being idiots. You saw it storming the court in basketball. Your stuff's getting stolen from the sidelines. People can't just be smart. And if you're going to storm the field, go around the other team. Don't try to go right through them. Don't steal things, all that stuff. But, you know, the actions of few are going to destroy it for many. There's going to come a day where they won't need the mechanical field goal post because they're going to finally get people to stop storming the field because you're going to continue to have incidents because people can't be smart about it. And it's a shame because I love field storming. I am pro field storming, but I am anti-idiot. And the idiots are going to end up ruining it for everybody, both player and fans. Like, I'm not excusing the player's actions at all. All of it's bad. And because of stuff like that, because people can't be smarter, a cool college football thing is going to go away. You did 20 years in the Navy and never met an Academy athlete? Interesting. Interesting. What's up with all these players acting like they're shooting someone? I'm sorry, I may be old man screaming at clouds, but it looks dumb. I think it looks worse than dumb. I'm old man screaming at clouds on this one as well. I know that they're not actually shooting real guns. I understand that. But there was a celebration that got flagged in the Minnesota-Michigan game. Or excuse me, the Minnesota-USC game. Michigan lost to Washington. Where defensive back got penalized, and I agree with the penalty. After he made a play, he pulled up his shirt to make it like to do the, hey, I've got a gun on my waist. Like, that's a celebration, and he got flagged for it. I'm okay with that. Not to get too political, we have an amendment, the Second Amendment here in America. I am a participant in the Second Amendment. It is locked away and stored away in a place where nobody but myself can find it. It is as high as it possibly could be. And again, very safely locked to where nobody else but me has access to it. But I am in favor of that, you know, doing it safely. So when I say what I'm about to say, I am not being that guy, but the celebration of gun culture is a problem. I think that's a problem. I think that celebrating, I mean, who was it that pretended like they were shooting the student section? Just bam, 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 shooting the student section. It's ugly, and that needs to not be normalized or celebrated to me. I think that it's really, and I'm waffling a little bit. I'm kind of stumbling on my words to, you know, avoid saying something wrong, but that is really bad, and it needs to not be celebrated. It needs to be penalized. It needs to be gone. It needs to be gone. You cannot do stuff like that, and you cannot celebrate stuff like that. And, you know, I know people hate the think about the kids argument, but there are young people that are watching that, and those are the people that they look up to. And then now they're going to go to school, and they're going to, you know, catch a pass on the playground, and they're going to start pretending like they're shooting guns at each other. And the more that you desensitize people to stuff like that, the worse it's going to get. And I think that it needs to go away, and it needs to be penalized every time. And coaches need to do a hell of a better job of stopping it. The fact that Dylan Stewart got penalized the way he did for what he did, and then turned around and did it again later in the game, shows just how deep the problem is. You can't do stuff like that. It just, it means so much more than just having fun. That's worse than that. And people need to recognize that. And yes, I'm an old man yelling at clouds. Yes, I was hoping to see our Vandy fan here. What's up, man? I hope you had so much fun yesterday. I hope you did. I hope you weren't playing a gig somewhere, man. I hope you weren't on the road. I hope you just got to hang out in Nashville and watch your Doors play, man. I'm so happy for you. I'm glad to see you. One game at a time. That's what good teams do. Take no one for granted. Any word on Trey Harris? I know what Kiffin said today in his media availability. I am under the impression that he is going to play on Saturday, and he is quote unquote okay. Now he might be a little banged up, but I don't think that, regardless of what the injury report is going to say on Wednesday, that Trey Harris is not going to play. I think that he is going to play. I worded that first part poorly. I expect him to play on Saturday. I think he's okay. You're very, very worried about LSU and having a defensive game plan that controls what LSU can do. Yeah, so LSU strength is Ole Miss's weakness. That'll be the matchup. But they Ole Miss can really get after the quarterback, and they can control the front six. So we'll see. I don't think that LSU presents anything on the other side of the ball. This could be a shootout. And I think that Ole Miss's defense is better than LSU's overall, and they will get more stops. But I do expect a pretty high-scoring shootout. What's up, Edward? Glad to see you. Just dropping in real quick. Just got back from Columbia. Really good win for Ole Miss and more room to improve. Part two of this critical stretch is now. Defense can keep them in any game. Absolutely. Is LSU in Baton Rouge or Georgia at home more difficult? Georgia at home, I think, is still more difficult. What a weekend it was. We are truly in a new era of the sport. The brandishing flag was silly. So that's the one you're talking about from the Cal game, where he pulls up his shirt to indicate that he's got a pistol on his waist. I disagree, but, you know, that's all. You know, we're certainly free to disagree. It's all good. With Parrish getting banged up and Jones not exactly making efficient runs, how long can Lane skirt the Bentley topic? It's getting absurd at this point. If Bentley does not play on Saturday and they can't run the football, then that's how long. But if they're struggling to run the football and Parrish is hurt, I think that this is the weekend where they get away from the charade and they play him. You were baffled when they put the kid back in the game after the gun celebration and he did it again, but instead he shot his own teammates. Yeah, I guess that's what made it not a penalty, but I don't care. You can't, you just got, you, there are some things that you just can't have being normal. And that's one of those things. On a sports field, you can't just have guys pretending like they're shooting people on the field. You just don't need to have that happen. Needs a stiffer penalty for sure. They're paid now. Fine the players and suspend them from games. That has to come internally, though. That has to come internally. When you played in the early 2000s, we did the throat slash and they started flagging it and everyone stopped doing it fast. Brandon with the super chat. Thank you, man. Thank you so much. Glad to see you, Brandon. Where have you been lately, brother? 45-17, Ole Miss, he says, final in Baton Rouge. Ooh, buddy. That would dramatically change the outlook on the season. In a good way, of course. What did I think about Malachi Moore's actions at the end of the Bama-Vandy game? It was really stupid. Now, I saw people say that Nick Saban would never allow that, as if Nick Saban didn't have a player have a full-on meltdown on the sideline, very similar to that in the national championship game. You know, that has happened under Nick Saban. But, yeah, that was an indicator of, look, I mean, it's an emotional thing. Players upset, did a couple of really stupid things, throwing his mouthpiece, kicking the ball. That was all really, really dumb. Is that an indication of poor accountability within Alabama? I would like to see more than that before I make that accusation. But just really stupid. Really stupid, but, you know, I understand those kind of emotional actions more so than, you know, if you were to punch a player out or get a sack on a third down stop when you're down three and or when you're down three scores and you pretend like you're shooting a guy in the face while he's laying on the ground. Did I see Callie Priestcorn's tweet about an Ole Miss fan making her feel unsafe? I saw it, and look, if somebody did something really wrong, then I would imagine and hope that they were dealt with accordingly. But the people freaking out about it, I think in the days of everybody's got a world-class camera and video recorder in their hands at all times, I hope that whatever happened was dealt with and with evidence to back it up. I just, you know, until I see more, I'm not going to, you know, call for any, I don't know what I'm saying here. I saw it. And if something bad happened, that's really unfortunate. But I would assume that it was dealt with and handled rather quickly. Greatest college football weekend of all time. Ooh, that's a The most chaotic weekend lately for sure of all time, though. That's interesting. I gotta think on that one. Malachi Moore seemed to be the only guy actually pissed about losing to Vandy. There's that. Watching the Bama-Vandy game, you got the feeling that they are more undisciplined than when Saban was there. But when you're losing to Vandy, you get how things can spiral. Just tuned in. Dart can kiss his Heisman hopes goodbye. Those, I think, ended last week anyway, barring them running the table. If he keeps playing the way he has the last 2 weeks, you'll put it in his words, he's throwing it with his purse. Yeah, he did say that about himself after the Georgia Southern game. I think he's pressing. We've talked about that before, but I do think he's pressing. He can certainly play better than that, for sure. What's my score prediction for the game? We'll do that on Thursday. We'll do that on Thursday. This feels better after going to Oxford for the Kentucky game and then coming to your home. Okay, coming to your home and the town of Aiken torn apart. Love the show. Sorry to hear that, Jeffrey, man. Thank you for being here and hope everything is getting better. I know that the damage and destruction and just the everything that happened is unfathomable. And I still am I'm seeing stuff from old friends that are still dealing with these things. And people are still begging for help. It's brutal up there. So it is, that's absolutely brutal. So hope you're doing well, man. And appreciate you being here. Well, that's it for me. Thank you guys so much for being here and being a part. This was fun. I think you guys are a little bit, I think you guys drive a better conversation after a win as opposed to a loss. So, you know, go figure, but we'll be back on Tuesday, as always, Tuesday, 8 o'clock, talking more Ole Miss and LSU. I'll see y'all then. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.